Oh, normi ti bodio.
Me pole minkin tipot.
Mä olen mä fucking tytrukkus.
Tön tön tön.
Mä olemme takaisin.
Tervist.
Terä. Minun nimi on Elis, a.k.a. Grynts.
Tervist, minä olen Karmele Kypsyyskan.
Ja koos me olemme tytrukkut. Tön tön tön. Tänane tüdrukute saade on väga eriline.
Jep. Me oleme teile seda lubanud ja nüüd see on siin, lõpuks ometi.
Eks siis väike hoiatus ka siia. Meil on täna külaline, kes on pärit Ameerikast. Ja ilmselgelt eesti keelt ei räägi, nii et we can switch to English.
Yeah.
Jep.
So nii don't
et, kui te ingliskeelt ei oska, siis sorry, aga... peate ootama järgmist podcasti või kuulema vanu siis.
Ja siis samamoodi, et kui te kannatate meie inglise keelt ära, kes teab, kui hull see on, siis kui see on normaalne, siis me teeme neid veel.
Just.
Nii et.
Okei, okay, aga tutvustame siis meie külalist.
Okei. Okay.
Our guest today is Caleb. Caleb, please introduce yourself.
Tere, minu nimi on Caleb. No, my name is Caleb. Actually, I had a perno for Vraskaveri on Monday, I think. No. It was Saturday, because today's Monday. It's the same thing as always. Dan was hosting, and he always introduced me as, oh, the next comic's from New York. His name's Caleb, but you can just call him Caleb.
Yeah, I heard that.
Yeah, we heard that.
Yeah. It happens way too fucking often.
But it was so funny. Yeah. I literally was like, oh, okay. First joke I actually laughed at. Like, cool.
But what show was it?
For Varskeveri.
Mm-hmm. What is it?
So Comedy Estonia, as you may know, right? We have a large number of open micers that's been growing steadily, and there's enough people now that we, for the second time, we've done what's called Best of Open Mic, which is where the core group of guys and the head of the company, they look at who's the best talent, and they decide who looks to be that as up and coming and deserve spots. So previously I've done like paid shows for Comedy Estonia Comedy Nights, right? So I did those ones. I've done like I went to Edinburgh for the Fringe and I performed with them. I got a guest spot there. And now I'm part of the what's called Varskaveri, or the fresh blood of Comedy Estonia. And so it's me and six other guys, two girls. Just going around Estonia. We've done our first show, and I think we have five or six more. One date is yet to be released, but...
That's really awesome.
Yeah, for me, it's the greatest feeling, because I don't want to do anything other than comedy, and I have to admit, it feels pretty damn good to be able to perform for Estonians mm-hmm. in English in Estonia, to the point where it doesn't matter that there's a language barrier. I'm still funny enough to get like at least 75% of the crowd. And it's the best thing, because I knew, like, my second gig ever, I did like a storytelling event for a 10-minute spot, and I met Louis Cezaran for the first time, who was originally the guy who sold me on Estonia. Like, if you look up Study Estonia, Work in Estonia, he's the guy narrating and in those videos, and I thought I would never meet this guy, and then just ends up I'm talking to him on Facebook, and now he's like sort of the manager. And I asked him, like, is there a possibility for a career here? He's like, in Estonia, no, there's nothing. There's no career-wise. So that was real draining for me. But I was like, fuck it, I can try something. And mm-hmm. I've worked really hard. And now I've gotten Vascaveri. I think there's me and two other guys, James Humphreys and Alexander Popov, are going to be putting on an English show in a month or two, each doing 20 minutes apiece. So, yeah, I'm an American comic living in this depressing place we call home.
I think we all have questions like, what the hell are you doing here? Like, are you okay?
Yeah.
But at the same time, let's pack it up, like, a little bit. I mean, okay, comedy. How is that, like, how did you first start? When was the first time you understood, like,
you realized you're funny.
No, you can't, yeah. Or, like, funny enough to do, like...
stand up.
Yeah, exactly. So
there was one thing that I listened to a podcast with Dave Rubin, and I forget who his guest was, but his guest said something that stuck with me for the last year since I've started my career. And I say that I've been in the game for, you know, a year and a couple months now, but I really only felt like my career actually started on Saturday, because that was the first tour, that was the first show where I was one of the focus pieces of a show, mm-hmm. and I wasn't just an addition, like with Comedy Nights was, where it was just Comedy Estonia, here's mm-hmm. the standard guys, and then we have additional open micers. But basically said, comedians are two types of people. Either they're, one, they were never, so it's kids who weren't hugged enough, or there's kids who hugged way too much. And I think I was more on the wasn't hugged enough in different yeah. areas. And I won't say my childhood was overly rough, but there were some really rough patches, and I, you know, use humor as a coping mechanism to try to find my crowd, and I never fit in. And, you know, I developed that feeling, and I, you know, whenever I was bored, I listened to comedians all the time. Mainly, like, the same four. Jeff Foxworthy, Bill Ingvall, Larry the Cable Guy, and Ron White. That was pretty much most of my high school. And then, I want to say, after my first year of here, when I developed, I had some problems. And I was really depressed. I went home. My mom helped me get better. And I came back. And this was right when Daniel Sloss's first special on Netflix was coming out. And I think the day after it came out, me and my girlfriend are watching it. And then I was like, I think I could do that. And I think I could do that. And she's like, yeah, probably. You speak a lot, so it makes sense. And then I was like, okay. And I spent the next 15 minutes Googling around, found Comedy Estonia. And I almost didn't text them because I thought they didn't have shows in English. And I was like, mm-hmm. let me just try it. I reached out to them. I got my first spot. And it was like, it was at Uxkeik, I think. It was either September 25th or October 25th, 2018. And I actually want to say it's more the September time frame. But then after that, I did that show, and then I never stopped. I've been pushing it to as many shows as possible to get my name out there.
You just knew that this is your thing.
Yeah, within a month, I knew that, like, this is what it was. Because I started calling myself a comedian after 2 months, and I still felt awkward about doing that because I wasn't sure if I was still qualified to say it.
Mm-hmm.
And then I want to say it took about 6 months to really get into the group of guys to be. I'm not even in the group, but I'm still part of the group, if that makes sense. The way I see it, because I just don't speak Estonian, so it's harder for me to get into Ari Matti and Mika Mema. I can talk to Mika easy. Ari's a bit difficult for me to talk to.
Why though?
Why?
It's just his personality. Like, me and him, I think, are similar in many ways.
Mm-hmm.
It's just, he's very established in the group, and he has his close connections, mm-hmm. and he's the kind of guy I look up to because he doesn't care who you are. Right? He just cares that you're a person. He's a person. That's the way I mm-hmm. get it from him. But more importantly, he's only here for a certain amount of time, so he wants to be with his friends, and he's hanging out. We go out to drinks, and, like, I don't speak Estonian. I should probably learn it. But it's not his responsibility to shift for me. It's my responsibility to shift for the group, if that makes sense. So okay. I found my group with other people. We get along great. It's just, it's a matter of, like, if someone looks up to someone, they're more likely to appeal to that person they look up to, and mm-hmm. nobody looks up to me if I'm, like, that kind of way. So, and this isn't me speaking ill of them. It's just the way it is, and it's a meritocracy, really. You know, you don't get a spot anyone can get a spot at open mic, but you don't get a spot at a paid show unless you deserve it, unless you've put the work in, and unless you actually need it. Like, you deserve it and you have the skill. Like, there's a reason for our first show, Pibe. You guys know Pibe? Kerkialias? No.
The girl?
Yeah, the girl.
Yeah, I think, yeah.
You might have seen her.
I might. I don't know. I've been to many stand-up comedies, yeah. Probably have seen her.
She started out in Tartu, and I think she should just hit a year in a couple, either she's hitting a year or she'll hit it in a couple months. So she was doing Tartu shows mainly, and she only did like two a month. She's really good at, she's a fantastic writer, and she's got great stage presence, and she's getting even better. And, you know, even though she started after me, she's still closing the shows, and I'm opening the second half, and it's like a weird feeling, but yeah, she deserves it, so she gets a spot, and that's just kind of the way the group feels, and it drives me to go forward. And now I have no idea where I was going with that tangent. I won't shut up if you don't tell me.
Me and Carmely were actually talking on our first podcast about you. Like, we were talking about how we got the studio, and it's pretty much thanks to you. Like,
yeah.
Some part, you know.
That was so random. Yeah, that was so random. Elise just called me. That was like main problem for us. Like, we want to do a podcast, but we don't have, like, equipment. We don't have, the place to do it. And then Elise called me, like, you have no idea what just happened. I'm like, what?
Yeah.
It was really nice. But, yeah, on that podcast, we were talking that we really, really like American comedians, sometimes even more than Estonians, because I think we, on our free time, like, watch a lot of, like, American comedians, like, you know, on the Netflix specials and on YouTube stuff like that. So maybe for me, like, some, you know, your friend James?
Yeah, James Humphrey, yeah.
Where's he from?
He's from Wales, Newport, Wales.
Okay, well, he has a pretty strong accent.
Yeah,
so and
super thick.
And, like, there are, like, some phrases or, you know, words that they use are different. Like, we have learned, I think, American English or, you know...
Yeah.
British, mostly.
Yeah, but we watch, like, shows and stuff in American English.
Yeah, for sure.
So that is, for us, like, sounds the most natural. But, for example, when James talks, like, I can't even understand, like,
it's hard
the
to,
jokes.
Yeah.
Because, like, he uses different phrasing.
Yeah.
And maybe
for
that's
you,
why.
Is it, like, a bit weird for you, too? Or do you understand everything
so
perfectly?
I am an American, but I've spent 75 to 80% of my life outside of the States. So I actually grew up, I spent the last 8 years in Europe. I spent, before that, I spent 2 years in Kenya, and then I spent 3 years, I took a break back in the States, and I lived for 3 years in Japan. So because of that, I have, I've developed somewhat of an ability to mix match languages, and like, when I hear Estonians speak, my English will adapt to them. If, like, I'll stop saying stuff grammatically correct and I'll just switch it subconsciously so it fits with you guys better. So when I'm, like, talking with him, same thing happens. Mm-hmm. And because we're both native English, it's just certain phrases I have to get over or certain ways you would say something. But for me, I get him fully. There's very few times his accent. It's mainly the accent spikes when he goes super hard into Welsh that I'm like, dude, I don't understand sheep fucker.
Okay.
But I mean, like... some Estonians, like, I think we know English pretty well, like, everyone studies it at school, but, like, it's not as advanced for most people, so maybe when you're on stage and, you know, you feel like it wasn't your best show, it's maybe because, like, some people just didn't get the jokes.
Yeah.
Because sometimes I'm like, I've listened to it pretty many times.
Yeah.
Like, I listen to the jokes. For me, it's hella funny. I'm like laughing my ass off and, like, other people quiet.
Yeah.
So maybe it's sometimes just people don't understand. So.
Exactly.
On Saturday on our first show, it's like a compliment or a greeting from Louis Cezaran, who is the manager and is one of the founders of Comedy Estonia. And he's like, welcome to the countryside, bro. And it's like, yeah, I get that now. Because you leave Tallinn, it's rough, like, I've done Vilandi one time, and that went well because most of the crowd was very young, so anyone who's playing Fortnite speaks English, right? But the Tartu show, I'm not worried about. The Rockvira, I have never been, so I'm nervous about that. Vilandi and Rockvira, I'm nervous because the same thing will most likely happen that happened in Pärnu, where I think 60-70% of the crowd understood me, and I could verify that because I could look at people, they're laughing their heads off, and then when I interact with them, they're so confused, why is he talking to me, that they're really conscious of what I'm saying, while other people, they just don't get me at all. Like, one of my good friends, Renard Trumer, he's on the Varskaveri tour as well, and his mom, he's from Pärnu, so his mom comes up to the show, and oddly enough, she gives me a compliment through Renard, and he's like, you know, Caleb, I didn't understand most of his stuff, you know, granted, but the stage presence really helped carry it away. So I've been trying to learn how to adapt the language, absence of language, through body language. And it's a very fine medium to walk through, because at one level, I don't want to imitate other comedians who are very, very physically active. And I don't want to be the guy who's just standing there. I need to be somewhere in the middle, but still use my body to express that to people. So, yeah, that's just, like, I understand what you're saying. Mm-hmm. And I think it's the fault of the Estonian government, where your English level is, because you all are taught grammatic English. Like, my girlfriend's dad, he can read English, and he can understand it mostly when it's written.
Mm-hmm.
And he can understand me speaking, but he can't speak it himself because he was only taught the grammar, not, like, how to functionally, conversationally use it, so.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, that's...
How did you even end up in here? Like...
Yeah, why did you come here, and how long have you been here?
Yeah.
Well, I got here by the... Well, I drove here today.
Not here.
To Estonia. Like, what started your journey?
Yeah, yeah, that's the question. I honestly, because for this, I understand why you're asking it, but when most people ask me, I want to smack them so hard.
Why?
I'm asked that question so many times.
How many... Okay, so Caleb asked me, I have cheek piercings.
Yeah.
And Caleb asked me, like, does water come out if I take the piercings off? And that is the main question people ask me. It's like, not, hi, how are you? What's your name? Your piercings, does water come out of it? I'm like, cool. So I get where you're coming from.
Yeah, or did it hurt?
Yeah, did it hurt? That's the second one.
Oh, yeah, I'm tattooed and I get that one a lot, too. People get surprised when I give them my response, and I'm like, I actually really enjoy getting tattooed. Like, it's one of the coolest feelings I've ever had.
How many tattoos do you have?
Five.
Okay, and what's the biggest one?
My entire pec's covered in a bear.
Oh.
So, like, about the size of my hand.
Can we see it, though?
I had to take off my shirt in my head. Yeah.
That's gonna be in the behind-the-scenes video.
Yeah.
Okay. Oh, that looks dope. Where do you go? All your tattoos are done here? Or?
Yeah. Oddly enough, so the three tattoos I have across my chest, when I got them, I think I was like my first year, and I had my dad had given me some money as a graduation present from high school because I moved here straight after. I actually think I graduated May 17th, 2017, I think. And I had left the country to go to Germany for a week. And then by like the 25th of May, I was in Estonia. And I was here for a month and then I left and then back. But regardless, I had the bear was done by Big Mora at Berados.
Okay. Yeah,
I had, what's his name? It's the Brazilian guy who...
Diego.
Diego did my sparrow. And then I have the compass was done in Turkey. My friend designed it. Okay. And then I have a raven that needs to be finished. And I have some mountain ranges on my underarm. But the three across my chest all have Russian gang meanings. And I was not aware of Russian gang culture until I started hanging out with Russians in Lasnima out near Radaku.
Well, yours are like... you can cover it up. My brother had... We had to cover it up. He had like... compass here or something, and I remember we did it. I actually tattooed it when I was like tattooed at my home, and we had no idea what it means. It looked cool, so we did it. And like after we googled it, it was like it meant something really bad. So
yeah, the
in Russia, and I'm like, shit.
The compass represents being a captain in the mafia or a gang. And the so
well that he ain't, so we had to cover it up.
Well, I respect them though. Like, I have a deep respect for the Russian gang in that sense of the tattoo culture.
Yeah, yeah, for sure.
Because it's one of the I think like in America sometimes people are too flashy in the Eastern blocs and in former Soviet countries. I really enjoy living here because you only show what's respectable and you only show what you deserve. Like, if I see some rich kid wearing Gucci and Prada, mm-hmm. and I smack him because he doesn't deserve that clothing, I'm like, most people are like, yeah, I understand he's being a dick. But the whole thing is that if you don't deserve something, you don't wear it. Like the compass, if you're not a captain, you'll get the shit beating out of you.
For sure.
The bear is strength. So the bigger the bear is, the more strong you're supposed to be. And so you have to be able to show your strength. But the bright side is my sparrow represents, like in the gang culture, is leaving the crime life for the straight life. So in theory, okay. I'm actually covered.
Out.
Right?
I'm out the game. But when did you, I don't know, did you Google it? When did you understand you have like all these meanings?
My Russian friend told me.
Oh.
He's like, do you realize those have gang meanings? And I'm like, I will never wear a tank top to Lasnima again. I grew up, I want to say like upper middle class, and my dad's a diplomat, so I grew up in international schools my entire life, and I was never aware of street culture. Like, I'm very distant from a lot of the popular cultures, so I was very sheltered in that sense, and I didn't realize the whole like the sense of what it means to be discriminated against. And I remember right when I got my bear done, it was in the end or beginning of summer. And I was wearing a tank top and I was at Circle K near my house and I got out of my car and then I was walking and a woman looks at me and she sees my chest covered and then she looks at me and looks away and looks disgusted. And it's the weirdest feeling to like, really, you're judging me because of my looks? Like, this is my...
Was she older?
I would say, yeah, she's like 35, 40.
I mean, that's not most that old, of those.
But, yeah. Well,
I got like... many tattoos. I got my first, like, you can't even see it, it's in the back of my neck.
Yeah.
And my grandmother, like, freaked out. She was like, you can never wear a dress, yeah, you can never wear your hair up, like, you're...
Estonians are rough, and our, like, older generations, they don't, they really, they, their parents taught them that when you get a tattoo, you're from prison. Like, that's the only reason you should ever have a tattoo. So when you grow up with that thinking, it's really hard to like make them feel don't worry, it's art. Like, they don't get it now because they feel like it's still not cool.
I mean, our parents are like okay with it.
Yeah, our parents, but like our grandparents and stuff, like that generation, it's hard.
My girlfriend's family had to grow. I realized they had to grow to be adjusted, you know, my girlfriend's got two little sisters that are very young. So my hope is that I show them my tattoos and they realize I'm a good person. So inherently, I can help destigmatize it. And I think that's a great thing. I remember there was an Estonian who's very important to me, and when I was like, I say like 15, 16, we were having a discussion. And I was like, I was giving my whole plan, which is like, I want most of my arms covered, my back done, parts of my legs. Like, I like 30 to 40% is where I think I'll finish at being covered. And she made the comment, you know, like, oh, tattoos are of the serving class, like the lower end class. And I understood, when I was in that moment, I was very offended because a lot of my family is middle class working. There's some servers, there's blue collar work. But most people are tattooed either for one or two, or they're covered. And you know, I was like, you're saying my entire family of how good it is. You're just downgrading because you don't know them. But now I've realized is that while they made that comment, them seeing me get more tattoos and realizing how I'm growing personally and professionally in my careers, I've destigmatized them to where it's no longer a worry, and they're more open to it. Now, I don't think they're going to be as open with other people, but with me, you know, it makes sense.
I remember when I went to Finland, it was, I don't know, maybe 6-7 years ago with my best friends. And I remember the point when I went to, in that moment, it was Statoil still, Circle K now, gas station. And I went there and there was like a cashier with tattoos, like sleeves, both sleeves. I'm like, damn, I wish this could be like happening in Estonia. But it was so rough back here. Like, we could never see like anyone tattooed, pierced, with tunnels, nothing. And now pretty much we can have like see commercials and stuff like that with people with tattoos and stuff. It's really cool to see. Like,
it's hard to find someone without a tattoo.
Nowadays,
everyone has at least one small somewhere.
Hidden.
I just got back from the States and I hadn't been back for about a year and a half. I spent like 18 months here. And, last August when I went to the Fringe, because I got my last tattoo, I think last April or last March, and I still got to finish it. But it was so nice because everyone is covered, because a lot of the work is all tradesmen, and all the tradesmen have like a sleeve mainly, or they'll have their calf, they'll have something like a block of their arm done. And I was like, wow, no one gives a fuck. And I started wearing tank tops. Then I realized I'm in Scotland. It's way too fucking cold for that shit. So I had to put... I've placed all my tattoos so they can be covered.
Yeah.
So I still have the possibility of a corporate style career if I so choose to, or government service. But I was like, I wish I could flaunt my artwork, because it's not... I don't see it as a desecration of the body. I see it as a celebration, and I see it as you know, something to display what you're about and what what is representative to you. So that's my overarching philosophy.
It is art, definitely.
Some people put their art on the wall, some people put it on their body.
Yeah, exactly. My sister gets so pissed at me because we'll go out for a fancy dinner. And so the standard, like a steak dinner in America, the standard dress wear for men is dark color jeans, some nice flats, so they can either be like dress shoes or sneakers. And then it's always like a collared shirt, and if it's warmer, you'll cuff your sleeves to about the length I have mine. Now, because I have my chest tattooed, I'll always open the button here, so it's frayed open, and I can display what I have because I'm proud of it. Mm-hmm. She's like, just fucking, I put it away. We're just.
This does is, she have no none?
No, she's like. When I'm 21, she will be 16 in October.
Oh, okay, okay. Young. So she has time.
Yeah, but I'm really influential on her, and I didn't realize it. Because when I was rapping, I was like, hey, let's get some tattoos, let's get some matching stuff. And she's like, no, I'll never get a tattoo. And I come back with like 3 or 4. And then she's all of a sudden in the car ride from the airport to our house. She's like, I want to get this one and this one and that one and here and there. Yeah. And this is going to mean that. And my dad looks at me like, I will fucking kill you if this shit happens. I was like, that's not my responsibility now.
I bet you're not the only one. Probably her friends and stuff will talk about tattoos also and see, like, on Tumblr, on Instagram, or on Pinterest, wherever you go, you see tattoos.
Yeah, that's...
It's, like, literally everywhere.
Yeah. I think that's... But that is a problem with tattoos, though, is that they're too overflown. Like, there's a level I see where you should be able to not be discriminated against it. I think if you have your neck tattooed or your face tattooed and someone doesn't want you working customer service or they don't want you working the front end of a car dealership, that's understandable. That's your choice. You are now putting that forward, right? But the overbearing amount of, look at me, I have a tattoo, I'm cool now, I think that's stupid.
Yeah, actually, that's what's happening right now, sadly. We can see, like, we discussed with my, like, other friends, like, coworkers and stuff, with, like, it's really hard nowadays. People really want those mass tattoos. We call them mass tattoos because, like...
The infinity.
Yeah, crosses and everything, the roses and shit like that. Now it's really popular to have, like, Hollywood tattoos. It means, like, really, really thin line so you can, like, cover it up because Hollywood has a lot of actors and stuff, so they want to cover tattoos easily, so they make, like, really tiny, really small, like, really, really... Like, it looks good when it's just, like, freshly done, but after, like, a month or two, it looks so bad, or like it's like faded away, it's like barely you can see it. But nowadays people want that.
That's
well, like minimalistic tattoos or
I think the style is not really the concern. It's the fact is people aren't asking themselves, why am I getting a tattoo? They're just getting a tattoo.
But I mean, like, the Hollywood tattoos, it's exactly like they're getting it because a lot of like famous people are getting
it. Yeah, and that's the problem. Yeah. They don't realize the ramifications of because I still deal with it. Whenever I get a tattoo, I'll go to the bathroom and come out of the sauna or come out of the bath or whatever, and I'll look at myself in the mirror for 15 minutes and I'm like, wow, that's actually on me. I can't take that off. And like I've like tried to, was it moving? No, it's not. Or I've been like trippy when it's flaking and stuff. I'm like, oh my God, I'm losing it now. I think we get it fixed and stuff. It never happens. But it's a weird process because I can't imagine myself without tattoos now. Yeah. But I cannot imagine myself with more because it's just, you know, it's, you know, you're so used to seeing just pink or just white or brown or black, whatever color you may be, whatever spectrum of the LGBT you are. You know, once that's on you, you're now stuck with that and your brain has to adapt. Like, that's now there. It's like if you lost a leg or a hand or a finger or something. It's phantom in the sense where you're not used to it and you got to get used to those demons.
But I feel like it's actually doesn't take a lot of time for your brain to get used to it because I feel like it took, so I don't know, for a few months for me to get used to these piercings. So literally when I look into mirror I don't see them. It's like people say, oh yeah, piercing, I'm like, oh shit, I do. It's like I don't see them anymore. But I think the tattoos are same. It is a, like a bigger decision to do it like you see it every day. Because when you do it on your chest, you don't see it like that all the time. But yeah, but I think you'll get used to it. And after like maybe a year or even less, you'll be like, oh shit, I can't even remember what it feels like to not have a tattoo there. Yeah. So.
In the sense of how long it takes, I think, because my bear took me about a month to get used to because it's so big.
Yeah.
But also, I always wear t-shirts or I wear a collar shirt. And most of the time, if I'm out in public, unless I'm doing a gig or I choose to wear a tank top, I cannot see my tattoos. And I feel and I look the same way I did prior to them. But then I take my shirt off or I put something else on and I'm like, oh yeah, like if I took, I have a t-shirt under, if I took it there, you could see the base of my mountains here, and then you could see parts of the raven's tail, and then I'm like, oh, I also have that now, so... Yeah, no, this is the longest chat I've ever had about tattoos.
Yeah, I felt the same way. So we were actually asking you about like how did you come here, and now we're about tattoos.
You chose like a good country where to display your tattoos. You have like 2 months from the whole year to display them.
Yeah, just
like, during the summer.
Yeah.
Pardon me, I'm a bit sick.
But you can even do that on summer because it's so cold.
No, yeah, really. I love living here because if I want to wear jeans in the summer, I can do that. In New York, I can't. Like, I have to wear shorts because I'll just get too sweaty. But no, I discovered Estonia when I was probably 17. And so I've been dating my girl for about 4 years now. So I met her actually in Istanbul. And
oh, really?
Yeah, so I actually came here the first time in 2015. I came here for 2 weeks of the year, so once in February, once in April. And then when I moved here, I had everything set up for me where I wasn't the same. I'm an American kid at my age, right? But it was vastly different than what my counterparts in the States would have received. And when I was dealing and applying to schools, like I've got, not to brag or humble brag, I guess, I got into 7 schools, right? So I got into like some state schools in the US. I got into like a school in North Carolina and Maine. And then I got into the Baltic Media Film Program at Tallinn. And then I got into BBL here. So like I was covered. I had my choices. But what mainly drove me to come here is in October 31st, Halloween 2016, I got evacuated from Istanbul, Turkey due to a terrorist threat. And so all non-essential personnel from Istanbul got evacuated. And I spent 6 months in Virginia, just outside D.C. And that experience just opened my eyes like, wow, I am seriously not that American. Like, I cannot identify with him. Like, I went back for Christmas, and my stepbrother, super into fashion, really into the streetwear. Mm-hmm. I cannot keep up with his slang. Like, I made comments. I'm like, I study languages, and it was so fascinating. It's like, I understand what you're saying, but yeah. Can you say it in a different way that's not where I'm like, are you on drugs? Like, that kind of thing. Love you, man. I don't think it washes, though. But yeah, so my main deciding factor was that when I was dealing with the culture, I realized I didn't identify with it, and I identified more with European culture because I'm under the classification of what's called a third culture kid, which means that you have spent... So you're from an original country. You've lived in another country long enough where you identify with those cultures. But then also, there's a third culture of a clash of all these different languages and cultures that you grow up in. So while I'm an American growing up in an American household in different communities that are American communities, but they're also kind of, you know, fluctuated with Germans and Kenyans and Japanese and Turkish. I go to international schools where I may be one of 15 or I'm one of 5, but here I'm the only American in the school, right? So that's my whole thing, is I'm used to being that. And going back to the States, I didn't fit in. I don't fit in here anyways. So it's like I never fit in, and I'd rather fit in somewhere where I'm more comfortable being me than having to learn everything over again. Yeah.
Makes sense.
And on top of that, when I was dealing with the schools, there was like a level of, I was expecting to be treated like an adult, and everything they're in, I felt like what I was being prepared for by these schools was school. That was it. It was going high school to upper high school, which would have been university essentially, right? And I had just finished the IB program, and I was like, I'm more advanced than this. Like, I want a challenge, and I don't want to go to 101 classes and go get drunk and then go to 101 classes. And so coming here, I had the option of, I have a job, I have responsibilities, I run a household, like I'm an adult, my life doesn't revolve around being a student, it's just an aspect of my life. My life revolves around being me and pursuing my passions. And then on top of that, you know, it took me a year to figure out this city, but I feel that this is the city where if you really want to try something out, it's a great ecosystem to where there's enough money here, you can make your millions. You just got to be really freaking clever about it. If you want to sit on your ass and smoke weed all day, I've done that for many months. you're not going to go anywhere. You're just going to get depressed. I've been there and I've gotten better. But when I actually started working and grinding, I was able to very quickly roll up the ranks of the one of the companies I work for currently. Comedy Estonia took me a year to really get in. And then, you know, the other company I work in, I slowly produced, I got more power in the company, but my English level, my lack of Estonian limits me. So I think that being here forced me to be an adult, learn what it meant to be an adult, because where you guys start drinking at like 16, 15, I started drinking when I moved here, and I started drinking with Finnish people, which is the worst kind.
Oh, God.
Yeah, no.
How did you end up on that group?
You got the full experience.
Yeah. It's like 0 to 100 real.
Yeah, no, because they introduced me to long drink.
Longero. Yeah. Makes you stronger.
Yeah, for me, that's rough stuff. Like it's well, no, because my
and he's like, what?
It's not that it's overly, it's not over, but it's like at 5.5% alcohol, when you're drinking a liter and a half of it.
Well, yeah, it tastes like nothing.
Yeah,
know?
That's
yeah.
So you drink a lot of it, and suddenly you're wasted.
Yeah, and that's it. Just hits you like that. So, but those experiences have made me who I am today, and more importantly, I was able to figure out, okay, I cannot do X, Y, and Z. I must do A, B, and C instead. And if I want these goals, and I have very, very basic life goals, you know, if there's my life goals are very basic, and I live, I would say mildly modest. I do like splurge and spend money where I need to, but like the clothes I'm wearing now are brand new, but only new because someone gave them to me. I hadn't bought clothes in a year and a half, right? Like I've stopped shaving my face because I like to grow out the beard and I really don't care. So I'm just at the level where I'm just doing things out of passion and not out of presentation, I guess. Mm-hmm. And you know, this city has made me think that, and that's just like Louis Cezarin really was the leading voice to it. Is like, you know, if you want to, his character in the ad is a pilot, and him being a pilot, you know, he's like, if you want to be a pilot, you can be a pilot. We have an institute for that. If you want to be an artist, we've got those. If you want to, you know, get a programming job, you can get that. There's so many possibilities here. Coming here, I realize those possibilities are more limited than they were explained in the commercial. Oddly enough, good advertisement. But it showed me the ideas like anything's really possible, because I had grown up in a very specific narrow path of what my goals were and what I was going to accomplish in life. And like, I already know I have a good idea where I would be if I was in the States. Mm-hmm. And being here has completely altered everything else, and that's the best thing. And so to go full circle, coming here was more that I wanted to be put onto my own devices. I didn't want to have to wait until I was 22, 23 to graduate university and then start life. I was like, I'm out of high school. I'm going into university. I'm going to do a 3-year program. I'm going to get my degree a year before all my peers, essentially. Let me see what I can accomplish before I get there. And I only saw that as an option in Estonia, and I didn't see that as much as an option to where I was going to be going in the States. Not saying I couldn't be the same location or further there. It's just, in hindsight, knowing where I have problems and where I lie in a lot of situations, I think I'd be worse for wear, and it would take me a couple more years to really address and to say, I'm going to fix these actions that I've done, and I'm going to go do different. And that took forever, didn't it?
No, it was fine.
What came to my mind was the saying, like, you can do anything you put your mind to. Yeah. We actually talked about it on the last podcast. We were like talking about how most people like give up before they even try. I mean, you take something new,
you try it, but you just give up on like the halfway.
If you can't like succeed like right away, then you give up. Like,
so if it's not easy, it's not for me. And then you just like go on.
That's I see that so often in comedy because so there's always like these weird, you know, like how you see like stocks go up and down, right? We have influxes of comedians, of new open micers coming and going, because once you hit a certain level, you're in it. Like you can't go back out of it. Your mindset changes. You view the world differently. At least how I see it, and I couldn't go back. Now I've seen other people who've only done one. Maybe the thing longest I've seen someone do is like 2 months and they quit. Like, yeah. I respect them because they've given it an honest try. They've written material. They've grinded at shows, mm-hmm. whether they did four or they did eight total. I don't know. But they put the work in and then they became something of themselves to whatever degree they wanted to. And they succeeded or they didn't. And, you know, it's always funny because I've, like, there's this one guy, the first time I ever hosted, I hosted at KPK. I hosted at Uxkeik. And, I didn't know I was going to host until about 15 minutes before, because no one else showed up and there was like five guys and I'm like, okay, I'll take charge. I'm going to do this. And I put this newcomer in the second half. I think I put him maybe fourth or fifth, and he had to wait. So the show starts at nine. So he had to wait until like 10:30 to go on. And for that entire time, I just see him profusely sweating, and he's progressively getting worse and so nervous to the point where he opens up his set in English, and then he switches to Estonia, and then back Estonian, and then back to English, and then back to Estonian, and then eventually I just screamed at him, like, Estigeles, right? Like, just do it in Estonian, man. Don't try to switch it up, because if you do that, you're going to mess your mind up, especially when you don't have the skills already formulated.
Why did he do that? Like half English, half Estonian?
From what I've been told from other comics who have been longer than I have, most people try doing their first set in English just because they, like you guys said, you watch a lot of English comedians.
Oh, okay.
Because, I mean, you can only watch so much of Sandra Roigas and Arimati before you know their jokes.
Mm-hmm.
And if you're not a comedian, once you know the joke, it loses the magic. Now, mm-hmm. I can watch Daniel Tosh and Andrew Schultz all day long and watch the same 5-minute clip. But I get enjoyment out of watching the craft of it, where I'm seeing, oh, that's that misdirection there. That's where the punchline is. He uses this to build tension, and he's using mm-hmm. these kind of actions. And then I can learn from it.
So I was, like, thinking here. Is it possible for you, when somebody comes up to you and is like, I want to be a comedian too, but has no, like... person isn't funny, let's put it like that, can he like or she learn to be funny? Is it possible, or it will still be like, it will be like funny but not like,
yes,
I don't know.
So if I go back to the quote I said earlier, where it's, there's two types of comedians. There's one, the kids who are there but hugged too much, or they were not loved enough, right? So it's loved, not hugged. So when it comes to the kids who were not hugged enough, right? Like myself, not saying my dad didn't love me or mom didn't love me, I just was in a situation mentally and in my own family situations where I didn't feel what I should have felt, I think. And I use humor as a defense mechanism. So I've, mm-hmm. when I started doing this when I was like, was pretty much the second I started cursing in fifth grade is when I started trying to be funny. And then I learned, okay, this joke doesn't work. Let me try it mm-hmm. this way. Let me phrase it this way. Hey, I know my friends. I know what his triggers are. I know everyone else loves it. Let me just tickle that little bit right there. But if you take someone, and the same thing is like, if you're hugged too much, you're given so much love, you realize how to get that love. And so when you go out into the world and you have a deficiency of it, then you have to go seek it out. And that's why people become comedians, I think. Now, if you're just an average Joe who goes through his life mm-hmm. and has never really faced any sort of like troubles or difficulties, never had to develop these skills, it's going to be a lot more difficult for you. Now, I'm not saying you couldn't be the next Kevin Hart. Your road is just going to be 20 times longer.
Yeah, yeah, okay.
Because you don't have those skills already assessed. I'm a firm believer that anyone can learn to be funny.
Mm-hmm.
But I've recently been starting to rethink that, where you can learn to be funny, mm-hmm. right? I'm not saying you can't, you know, you can't get on tour, but you may never headline your own show, because I think you can learn to be funny, you can learn the skills, and I know comics who in Comedy Estonia who are learning to be funny, and I can see their development. Like, yeah, you're, man, when you started, you were dog shit. Now you're getting pretty good. Like, I can say that because you're now getting that good. Now, I've seen comics do the complete opposite, or they just ignore advice. You can learn to be funny, but it takes a certain kind of person to deal with the rises and falls of being a comedian. Because you can go, like, in May, last May, I remember I closed off Comedy Night, so I did Talent, Tartu, and Vilandi in Pärnu. So I did four shows, and I had a solid 10 to 11 minutes. After that, I got so depressed because I had no material anymore. I had to start from the ground zero to rebuild a new set. And that happens every time, you know, when you have a bad show and you just bomb, or you do really well and then you do really well and then you bomb even harder, or you expect to do well and then you bomb. It's those kind of dealing with those that says whether or not you can be a comedian. Now, learning to be funny, you just have to put the hours on the stage. That was the best advice Ari's ever given me. It was like, you know, there's two, if you, because he does jujitsu, he's like, you know, there, you can have two kind of people. Someone who studied very hard technically, and being all technical, you may know how to maneuver around someone. But the guy who has 30, like 1,000 more hours of just sparring, most likely will kick his ass, right? Because the guy who's been in there for 500 hours, you know, he's very technical and he knows how to do. The guy who's got 1,000 hours, that extra 500 is now muscle memory, where he's just in the zone to go. So it's, you can develop the skills, but unless you have, you've developed the skills to be funny, right? And you can get on stage, you can write your material, and you learn how to craft it, because everyone starting out is shit, right? I think most times you have the beginner's luck of having a couple good shows, then you hit your first bombing, and then you reassessed, hey, maybe I'm not as funny as I think I am. And you realize, oh shit, all the jokes that people love, they're not funny to other people because they're actually inside jokes. You've just been telling it to the same 10 people. And then you have to learn, oh, how do I make a joke funny for everyone to understand? And then once you understand that, then you become generally funny. But to be on stage and constantly grinding, that's a different kind of situation. But does that answer the question, though? I felt like I went in a weird tangent.
No, yeah, you did.
One of the funniest sets you did, I think, was when you did the crowd work with the front row chick. You put that on Instagram as well. That was so funny. I mean, when you do crowd work, I mean, you kind of have to be like naturally funny, right?
Yeah, I wouldn't say... I was actually talking, so on Saturday, I drove back from Pernu, and then oddly enough, I drove from my house to Telskivi, which was in the direction of Pernu. But I dropped Dan Weinberg's, drove him home. And we were talking about that, and I was like, you know, what do you think about crowd work? Because I've heard it's hack, right? And he's like, yeah, it's hacky as shit. Like, it's the most hack stuff. Because you can't make a career off it. It's a good skill to have, but like, I know I'm getting in a zone where I'm way too comfortable doing it. I need to get back to writing material, and I'm struggling to get back into it. But you know, when you develop those skills over time, because then you learn, like, I learned how to read a crowd. Like, oh, I know this person isn't having fun. This person, you know, is really open to jokes. Like, I made a Ramadan joke about this one chick. Whole crowd at KPK erupts laughing. There's an Indian guy behind him. He is laughing way too hard at that joke. So I now know from assessing the crowd that he's open to these kind of jokes. So let me go into a 2-minute bit just about him. And then we go on these massively stereotypical stereotypes of Indians in Estonia and like Taltec guys. And it's so much fun with him. And he's really enjoying it. And then there's this one chick out in the corner, blue-eyed, blonde hair, Estonian, was not happy with it. And when I pointed it out, I was like, why are you offended? Right? When literally the guy I'm talking about is laughing his ass off, why are you not offended? And so that's like when I learned that's like the moment I knew I'm getting good at understanding how the crowd works and how to pick on them. But when that moment happened, which, by the way, you can catch my Instagram at Caleb Brunick, CalebBrunick on Instagram.
Smooth.
Yeah, I know. I'm just going to plug myself. By the way, follow me again for Varskaveri tour dates coming up. My last post has it.
I think you can see the events on Facebook. Comedy Estonia.
Yeah, on Comedy Estonia under the events section of the Facebook page. You can grab them too. I think the Tallinn show and the Tartu show are the only shows we've sold online tickets. Everything else is door sales. 5 to 8 euros of cash only, please. Okay, now I'm done plugging that shit. No, but like with her, it was just too easy. It was just too easy to like, you're out of the zone. And you're giving me information. And she realized, if you watch the video, she realizes I'm asking her questions to find those little bits of those little nuggets that I can make a joke on. But then I think she realized at a certain point, oh, hey, he's doing it. And then she realized I'm not going to win this battle, right? I have the crowd on my side. Anything I say is going to go, essentially. And, you know, those are the moments where I really live for, because it's so in the moment. It's stand-up's a drug. It really is. It's the only time I've ever felt where I'm in the moment. There's nothing else in the world matters. Like, I can have a shit day, but a good set is the best high. And I compare that to being tattooed, because when you're being tattooed, you have so much endorphins and shock that you're just in the moment. And that's the same thing for me. And then I get into a flow state where I'll come off stage and I'm like, and I don't remember much of that. Like, I very rarely will come off stage being like, I remember exactly what I said. I have a rough idea because I have notes, but I don't know exactly what I said unless I recorded it. So, but yeah, no, that one was a turning point for me, actually. So, like, the Varska Veritor, when I get good compliments from Ari and Sander, I know, like, I've hit something, and those, when I get those, and I know they're benchmarks, like, thank you. It's a sign. Because, like, when I get something from Sander, like, he's a very quiet guy, and I think he's quiet in certain situations, he's loud in others. He's a very diverse guy. And when I get advice from him or we talk, he's a very, very humble guy. I really respect him. And his advice is, you know, tenfold in importance to me. So when he says, just like, good set. Because at the end, if you ever watch us, you will fist bump each other. Yeah. Like, good job, right? There's sometimes I'll come off stage and he'll be like, good set. Like, he killed it. When I hear those, I'm like, that is something of high importance. Let me take charge and really address it, and then go home and sit down on my computer and analyze it for 3 hours. So, yeah, no.
Okay, I have a question.
Shoot.
So, when you write sets, where do you take your inspiration from? From every day, or maybe sometimes you're just, you know, bantering with friends and.
So actually, this is a question I get often. A lot of times, people are like, do you come up with your stuff on stage? If I'm doing crowd work, yes. If I'm writing material, no, I do. I think for a 5-minute set, when I'm actually working, first time will take me 2 hours to write a proper set, to write 5 minutes. And then,
but do you write like all down the full choke, or do you put like, you know, words?
I think the first draft, I'll generally will write it out. And I'll, so if I, I don't have my book with me. Hold on a second. So this is like my registration, but I have a notebook, and it's about a little bit bigger than this size, right? And I've now analyzed to the point of my handwriting to font size to style that one complete page is approximately a minute, because I know when my laughs are going to be, I know where my timing is going, and so when I write it out, I write out most of the stuff once or twice, and then when I go on stage, that's when I feel the writing actually happens for me. Writing it down gets me the format and gets me the structure, but it's not until I get on stage I know what works and doesn't, and then I'll come back and I'll rewrite it a couple times on paper. But then at a certain point, I'm just writing bullet points, like, you know, it's if I'm doing, I have a joke about the Ferris wheel, right? And it's like, Ferris wheel joke, lost Noah bit, terrorist attack bit, Iraq bit, like, I can make the comparison, and then I know where that goes. But like, inspiration wise, it kind of comes from a multitude of places. I don't like one-liners, really. I think they're great, they're really good, they're really solid. I just don't like doing them because I can't remember 40 bits in a set. I only can do 3 or 4. And mainly they come from my life or a thought I have, and mainly when I'm driving. So like, I'll send out a voice message to my girl in code that I key trigger words that I'll remember me, stuff like if I have a joke about getting molested at the airport security because my name was on a watch list for terrorists, so when I sent that to her, I was like, hand job JFK airport fun time family reunion, like, there's it goes full circle, and she's like, what the fuck is this shit? And I'm like, just hear me out, and then I'll explain it, and then I write the bit out, and then it's those, even those trigger words, if they're out of order, I won't get the joke later on. And so, you know, it's like, I have a moment where I'm like, this makes sense to me. Like, I have a theory, I've developed, when I went to Narva, I met a good friend of mine, Chris, you may or not know him, he went to EBS, he was Erasmus, but he was gay, and so we would talk about dicks all the time, because I, to the point where I make people feel uncomfortable because they're like, well, I'm like, it's just the human body. Why do you not feel comfortable? So we're talking about dicks. So I have this whole the theory of utility of dick I'm working on. It's quite impressive, I think. Like, it's my best work. what was the other one? But, you know, just like, I have these moments where I'm like, this is something, but I have to discover it more. So it just you know, I work on one set for about a month. So if I do my work proper, I should go do the same 5 minutes about 10 to 14 times before I know it's really honed. So that's approximately an hour to hour and 20 minutes on stage of just doing these bits. So per bit, it's like, I don't know, 15, 20 minutes of doing the same bit over and over again. And that's when that writing really gets going. And that's when I can hammer in where that joke goes from. Because Matt Parker and Trey Stone, they gave the best advice to NYU, and you can find the video on YouTube. But they pretty much said, you know, if anywhere in your story, between the beats of your bits, or between the bits of your scene, it says and then there and then and he said, like, if you're just walking them through the dialogue, it's shit. But the purpose is that you want to write so that, you know, between those bits you're saying but therefore. You know, like, I'll give you one bit. I had this joke about the Ferris wheel, right? And the whole joke is that whoever built that is such an asshole that I hate them, and I hate that thing because of what it represents, right? It represents the idea that Estonia is a boring country, right? Because we're so boring that we have to invest money to build a Ferris wheel on a mall nobody gives a fuck next to Lasnamäe, as if that's the best location. Yep. Right at the top, if I'm getting a blowjob, I don't want to be like looking out and seeing like, oh, my parking's up. Oh, there's Sergey getting stabbed. Oh, I came. Like, I don't want to do that. and then I'm like, therefore, or I'm saying like, but, you know, it makes sense because, you know, Estonia's a depressing ass country. We're in the dark for 8 months of the year. That's 75% of the time. So like, when we're really depressed in March, right before the sun comes back, you might want to spice it up with your own little 9/11, because why else would you put a dartboard next to the airport?
Mm-hmm.
Now this is I did this joke in Pärnu, and they they love my Martin Helma shit, but they really feel uncomfortable with this one, because when an American brings home the idea that a terrorist attack could occur here, they get real sensitive about that. And that's what I love. I like making people feel uncomfortable, because the point of a joke is not always to make them laugh, it's to make them think. I think that's the way I see it. And so when I address it further, it's like, I remember I did the bit for when I opened for Naomi Cooper, and I made the comment like, well, we do that all the time to Yemen, so it's not that big of a deal. And everyone's like, oh my God, that's terrible. Why? Because Yemen's in a civil war. I said, as an American, if I just said we do that all the time to Iraq, same shit, different toilet, y'all would have lost your goddamn mind. And everyone laughed like, yeah, you're right, we would have. I'm like, yeah, you're a bunch of fucking racists.
Has it ever happened that you forget a bit? And if you do, what happens then? Do you have like backup?
Do you just start talking with the crowd at that moment, or do you just like?
So that has happened to me when I've been high on stage, and I don't. I no longer drink before shows. I try not to drink at shows. Mm-hmm. I've stopped drinking for a while now. And when I realize that when I'm nervous, I don't forget bits. When I'm too comfortable, I'll forget them, or I'll go in a weird direction. And if I do forget a bit on stage, it's not the end of the world. When I remember it happened to me like 5 months in, that happened, and I didn't have enough material to fall back on. But now I have, you know, I have a solid 30 minutes of backlog in my head. I can't pull it up on instant, but, you know, if I'm leading a joke or I get a heckle or something, I can go down that way and I have material. Because quite frequently I've been heckled a couple times and my entire set's fucked. I'm like, okay, we're not doing that anymore. We're going to go back to safe material. I know that works. Because now it's no longer working the material. It's working my skills and honing the jokes again. But I wouldn't say I inherently always switch to crowd work. I just do crowd work really when I open up, and if I'm really feeling that crowd work and I want to explore an idea, I'm like, okay, let's just do that. But I don't try to do when I do crowd work, I'll try to either, I see it two ways. It's either one way I'm thinking of a bit and I'm going in a direction, and I've used that person as inspiration for a situation to go into a joke that I can then pull out later and then interview it somewhere else. Like I have another joke about for the Indian guy, for the stuff I was talking about, mainly a bunch of like TransferWise, Bolt, Vault jokes, and then when it came to, I was like, do you ever realize that at least like in my situation, I've never gotten yoga advice from a brown guy. Like, I'll be honest with you. Every time someone has come to me and be like, you know what? The downward dog would really affect your mental health. His name's always been Brad. Or Chelsea. Like, it's never been Vishnu or Delhi. Right? It's always been some guy who, like, went to Stanford and he's never worried about a day of life. Not some guy who's like, this has kept me alive for 45 years. But like that one interaction I had has now developed into a bit that I'm the bits there. Just I don't have nowhere to put it yet into my set, into my other jokes, and so it all goes full circle. But if I do just revert to crowd work, it's either I'm going for a bit or I'm going for laughs. And if I'm going for laughs, I'm like, I just want to be known, I want to be heard. And like KPK are those nights that I don't give a shit. Let's just go for it, and whatever happens happens. If it's a bad set, it's a bad set, and I deal with the consequences of that depression and whatnot.
So. Do you like see yourself doing comedy like all your life in Estonia, or do you wanna what's your goal?
Not in Estonia, but like everywhere, I guess.
In Estonia wise, because we'll start from a little bigger. In Estonia wise, I know that, you know, because I will not say it, but I do know how much like certain people who are doing solo tours, you can, you know, think of who I'm talking about if you want to. I kind of have a rough estimate from talking to the administration side of the company about how much they make. And for me as an English comedian, I know I can never sell Ari Matti's level tickets. One of my goals is I would like to go back to the States or back to the UK or Germany where there's good comedy scenes, work my skills up, then come back. And I think I have a good chance. If I come back doing a solo show, I could sell decent amount of tickets here because I can then use all my Estonia jokes here. But long term wise, I think comedy is like one of the very few things I can do. Or even if I stop doing comedy for whatever reason, you know, Lord forbid it, the jobs I want to go to are still in the same field where it's creativity, it's advertisement, it's writing, it's something where I have to be different and unique, and that's fundamentally what I crave. Like, it's the attention's a big thing for me. Like, I get the fix of people like getting gratification from being on stage, where like, wow, I just made 50 to 60. I've done like in Komtele in Tartu, like just 220 people. I'm like, wow, 220 people just did that. Or made a Ekra joke that called half the crowd Nazis. Like, wow, I just did that. I pissed off 100 people like that. It's the weirdest feeling. And you know, I just see it differently now, where I see it differently to the point where there's nothing else I could do because my mindset has changed originally from just being that guy where it's like, I'm going to join the military and then my plan is to go security and work for the State Department or get a contracting job with the NSA or the CIA or, you know, whatever fate may hold for me. I've said, no, I don't want to do that because I've seen how other people do it. And it's always a grind just to stay at your level and to improve. But I don't feel you get the recognition you deserve. Like, in America, we praise our troops. You know, I'm very honored to say that we have a great military and we stand for what our fundamental ideas are. But for me, it's very narcissistic, but I desire to be recognized for my achievements. And comedy is the one occupation where, Dave Chappelle just said it, it's like, it's where you can use everything you have in your arsenal, within your head, on stage. But more importantly, now this is my own speaking, is it's the only thing is if I get to a certain level, like if I got the Ari Matti level, right, that's not out of the reach. That's like 8 years down the line if I really work hard and I eventually get out of Estonia. If there's no Ari Matti, there's no tour. If he says, for whatever reason, he loves comedy, right? Mm-hmm. If he chose, I'm not going to do the show tonight, I don't give a damn about the tickets I sold, I'd rather just do something else. You know, he's out the money for that show and had to pay. He would have to theoretically pay it, but it's his decision. It's his choice to go on stage. And he's assisting in employment of everyone else. Now, that's not to say that that Comedy Studio couldn't replace him with someone else to sell similar size tickets, but for his tour, for his thing, that is strictly dependent upon him. And for me, I like the idea that it's him. That's his brain. We're sitting down to listen to him for an hour, you know, not just taking orders and writing in a book. So
I think it's like every job that's somewhat like creative, like you draw, mm-hmm. I take pictures, you write jokes. I mean, everything's creative, and you're your own boss.
Comedy is art.
Yes.
Yes.
Comedy is tragedy plus time.
So we support all creatives, and actually we have to wrap this up now because you have a show to get to.
Yeah,
I'm actually driving here. I'm gonna have to drive over there. So if you want to stay, I mean, I gotta be there 15 minutes before, and that's in 45 minutes. So if you want to end it now, here's good. If not, we keep going. You know what I mean?
You can to end it, say some inspirational quotes or a joke. Or
keep going with the jokes.
Oh, the jokes. Hold on. Actually, I'm going to plug some shit. I'm going to take advantage of this one.
And you can practice your set here
for the show. I have... I wouldn't...
Yeah, you can try the jokes on us. So
I would think about doing that, but the problem is that whenever you ask me, like, oh, I went back to the States, right? And I'll tell you the story. So I went back to the States, and my cousin, who just turned 16, has got a boyfriend now. So we walk in, and my cousin's a firefighter. His name's Justin. My other cousin's Haley. So me and Justin really close, because we're, I think, 2-3 years apart in age, but we always get along together. And we're both from upstate New York. We've never been to Boston, but we see each other and we start speaking like Marky Mark, trying to I can't even do it right now because it was in the moment. But like, we're doing it. I'm really physical, hugging him, squeezing his ass, his titties, everything, right? And he's a very skinny dude, so it's not much to grab on. But Haley walks in, and her boyfriend comes with him, and he's like, he's weirded out already. And then we get to talking, and he's gonna become an electrician or something to that effect. And you know, we're talking about hunting and guns and stuff. And I was like, yeah, I'm thinking about getting my my weapons permit so I can eventually buy a hunting rifle, and that way I can hunt for my own meat. You know, Joe Rogan inspired me, kind of thing. And I just think the idea to me frightens me that I have to end an animal's life, but I would rather have, you know, 15 to 20 kilograms of deer in my freezer that I've killed and I think I deserve, rather than constantly aiding and abetting this mass slaughtering of animals. Now, I love bacon, but I just don't want to kill a pig, right? So that's the thing. But if I'm mainly consuming red meats, I want to do a safer way. And in New York State, to own a rifle, right, you don't have to have a permit. You just have to pass your background check and you're fine to go. Handguns is when the permit comes in. And he looked at me really strange. He's like, because I already told him I live in Estonia. And he's like, where the fuck do you live? I'm like, Tallinn. He's like, where the fuck is that?
I'm like, made up place.
Yeah, I'm like, you know, it's the elf land. And he's like, where's that? I'm like, it's in Estonia. He's like, what county is that? Because he thought it was in upstate. He thought it was in really northern New York.
No.
And I was like, I don't live here. He's like, where do you live? I'm like, in Europe. He's like, what, where? I was like, do you know Russia? He's like, yeah. Do you know where Finland is? He's like, kind of. I'm like, right on that border. Like, we're nestled right there. And he's like, that makes a lot more sense. Yeah.
Exactly. You always use the Finland, Russia, Sweden, Latvia. Yeah. And people usually know these countries.
I don't say it often enough, but, and my friend told this to me when I was in high school. If you look at, you know, like the Baltic Sea, the North Sea, and that weird massive fjord that goes between Sweden and Finland, it kind of looks like a guy with his two legs and his like a massive ass dick.
What?
Like, once you see it, you cannot unsee it.
I want to see it. Fuck it. Do you want to see it?
Yeah. While you're looking.
Do you want to see dick?
While you're looking that up, I'm gonna plug this up. So.
Yo, it does.
Varski Veritor. Tartu Genikalet Klubi on the 15th, this Wednesday. 16th is Tallinn at Valencrawl. 24th of January at Vilandi Villa. And the 25th of January is going to be Rakvere Cultural Keskus. Yeah, so we're like, we're nestled right under the dick, and like Latvia's hugging the balls.
Yeah, definitely. Wow.
Yeah, so when I explained to him, like, I'm right under that guy's dick, he looked at me like I was fucking insane.
I mean, nobody knows Estonia, so you can kind of, like, fuck with people. Like, it's in Antarctica.
Oh, no, I've lived here long enough that I've identified with the culture to, like, after 2 weeks, I was like, I'm really missing home. When I was in New York, I'm like, I'm really missing home. And my stepfather's like, why? I'm like, I really need a sauna. Like, I'm not going to pay $15 to go pay for when I have one at home. It's like just those kind of things. And then when I explained to what a sauna was to this guy, he looked at me like I was fucking insane. Because I have pictures on my phone of me and my friends. I have two pictures. I'll show you to him afterwards if you want. But it's me and my friend in... Now, my bathroom's a very large bathroom. So we have like a king-size bathtub. And we have a small sauna. So we come out of the sauna. My girlfriend's in our bedroom. She's just doing whatever, you know, on the computer. And my friend is a shisha tender. So he brought his pipe, his hookah and his shisha over. So we're smoking in the bathroom. And then it's me and him on the bathtub edges, right? With our legs up on the side. So you can only see one leg up. So it looks like we're kind of scissoring, right? And then we timed it so where he took a very large breath of smoke, and then I took one as well. My girlfriend came in to take the picture, and we're both blowing smoke up in the air at the same time. So I show this to the picture. So it's me, you know, sweaty, wet. You obviously can tell I have no shirt on. He's naked. You see his leg, his tattooed arm. It's fucking hilarious. And then he looks at me like I'm weird. I'm like, but wait, I got one better. The other one's with my friend, with the other friend. So it's in the bathtub. It's now not big enough for three guys. So we're just sitting there, like with our knees tucked up to our chests, just sitting in the warm water. And girlfriend takes a picture. We're all blowing out smoke. And I'm like, yeah, that's what I do on a weekend. I just sit in a small room with three other guys, very naked, sweating.
Yeah, it's funny. It's like, why, like, Estonians and Finnish people, like, it's voluntarily, like, torture. Like, it's basically a torture chamber. When you put it, like, really, really hot.
Yeah, but those people who put it really, really hot really have mental health issues. Like, they need to be addressed. Like, I think if you're putting it at 200 degrees, that's, you could never do that. I think it, like,
you can never do that.
Yeah, no, like, I think, like, if you're doing, I max out at like 85, 90, but people who put it to 110, 120, that's where
even
I'm like,
if we did like 100 now, it was too hot. You don't sweat anymore. It's just hot.
Yeah.
It just burns you. So...
Dry. Saunas are not that like popular in America, right?
No, we are an exceptionally prudish culture.
It's weird. I've heard, like, went to LA and talked to people there, and they're like, "Why are you like guys naked? Isn't that weird? The fact that we're like not naked, but we do have like towels on, but it feels for them, it feels weird.
Yeah,
it's like sitting next to each other, like." I don't know.
Ari had a bit, and I won't say the bit, but he's pretty much like, can you trust a guy if you haven't seen his dick? Like, I'll be honest with you, if you won't show me your dick, like, it's the same terms, like, the gayest thing a straight guy can do is not to kiss a guy.
Wait.
Yeah, you think about that. The gayest thing a straight guy can do is not kiss a guy. Because if you don't kiss a guy, you admit that you're not comfortable showing that you can you can show affection like that, and that decreases... the idea of masculinity, and it increases your femininity, essentially. You don't want to admit that you're gay. That's the whole logic. And so it's like, if you're not secure enough with your own body, how can I trust you to, you know, deal with business or whatever? And that's, you know, same thing, go full circle. It's comedy. So if I can't show my dick to people in public, how can you trust me that what I'm saying is true? So, yeah.
Sure. Yeah. What about, like, spas? You have spas, right?
Yeah, I've never been to a spa in America.
Do you have like steam saunas?
Yeah, so we have in like we call them Ys or YMCAs or.
It's not important.
I actually don't know what it is. I don't think I've ever known what it is. But we have like steam rooms where it's like it's like Turkish style where it's all tiles and steam, so hot steam, cold tiles. But no, I prefer that we have those, but I just think they're. The pine saunas or the wood saunas are not as common. Only when you go to purposely Russian bathhouses or you go to Russian neighborhoods where those are already established.
There are Russian neighborhoods?
Yeah, you know, you realize that's why it's called like Little Italy or Chinatown, right?
Well, yeah.
Yeah, so the same thing applies is that those when people would immigrate to those areas, you have a mass amounts of people. So you can go down to New York City and you can go down roads where... The signs are in Cyrillic. The shops are in Cyrillic. You can't pay in rubles, but, you know, the woman behind the counter is going to speak Russian. She might not even speak English. And there are areas where it's, like, an authentic bathhouse, or it's, you know, Or like it'd be the same thing like Finland where you have the public saunas. They'll be theirs, but it's just they're not going to necessarily be the Turkish ones. They're going to be like maybe a Turkish hammam and a wood sauna. So, yeah. We have them, just I've never been.
Okay.
Yeah.
Do we have any more questions?
No. I think I'm done. I'm good.
Yeah.
If you're good.
What's the best date?
The best date?
State.
New York.
Why?
Because, well, the city fucking sucks. I'll give you that one. No. Honestly, well, when you ask an American that, if you ask someone from, like, the Midwest, they're going to say a coastal state. But I would honestly say that New York is the best state because it's so diverse. Because most of the time, when you think of New York, you think of Manhattan, Brooklyn, Queens, Long Island, Staten Island, right? But that's only so much of a fraction. Like, if to get to my hometown from the airport, JFK, right? Imagine you drove from Tartu to Tallinn. Sorry, you drove from Tallinn to Tartu, right? And then you drove from Tartu to Valga or to Elva, right? That, like, that's the distance you had to travel to get to my hometown. And then I'm another 30 minutes away, right? That's just my grandma's house. And because people don't realize how vast it is. So we actually have mountain ranges. We have large peaks. We have the really redneck northern areas. Then we have the super expensive city. And then we have those, we have like coastal towns. We have everything. Yeah. I mean, I don't agree with the current governor, Cuomo. He can go, actually won't get into politics here. But, you know, I don't agree with him, but the state overall is a very big love spot for me, and it's, you know, it's such a magical place, I think, to where there's, again, anything you can think of what you want to do, you can find it somewhere to do.
Mm-hmm.
Now, if you go over to, like, California and stuff, I'm like, sure, it's great, you have the beach, but, like, do you have actual rain or some shit? Like, yeah, this, you know, it all depends on, asking me that is like asking, well, I thought of a lot of stereotypes to say right there.
Say it.
No. no, yeah, no, I just think New York's the best state.
Okay. last question. What do you hate and what do you love about Estonia?
God.
Hate first.
Everything.
it's love? Love. What is there to love about it? So, no, I'm kidding.
I love about Estonia that it's safe.
Like, yeah, it's like, I love that our language, nobody knows. I love the fact nobody knows where we are. I love the...
nature?
The mainland thing.
I love the fact that everyone is so interconnected that the idea is the rule of the separation, the rule of six, which is an idea of separation. So that means that there's only between you and the Queen of England, essentially. There's only six people possibly between, like, if you know six people, one of those people will know one person who will know one person, right? So there's a way to get to anybody, essentially, right? That doesn't exist here because it's too fucking small. And so everyone is so interconnected that if you want to get something off the ground running, or you want to do this, or you want to do that, or you need to find someone to do this, like, just put up a Facebook post and it's going to get shared one time and your guy's like, I'll do it for you for $15.
Exactly.
Like, fuck it, I won't even charge you. Just cover my gas money. But, like, hating-wise, I don't think I really hate anything. Like, you would think, like, oh, you must hate the darkness. And, like, I don't know, it brings more people into shows because there's nothing else to do in the dark.
True.
Well.
No, I think the one thing I would hate is that the level of alcohol, right? Like, I really do enjoy the effects of alcohol. I really do. I'm taking a break from it currently. I'm taking a break from most substances. I say that because I've only done two, really. But the logic is that if it's so dark out and there's nothing to do in the city, right, what else can you do but drink at a bar, right? So that it's so easy to fall into a habit. And, you know, when I ask Estonians and stuff, like, oh, I started drinking, I'm 15, 14, you know, I'm like,
no.
Yeah, but that's not good for you, right? That's kind of like why I agree, like, in America, it should be 21, right? I think I'm one of the very few people who agree with this. And just because you can do it doesn't mean you should. And it's often that people use it as an excuse to go into excess, and that excess leads people down dark roads. And it led me down a dark road, a very nasty one. And I'm grateful to be where I am today, and I'm past that point in my life. It's just there is not enough of a collective social network to fully understand that. And I think, you know, when you're 16 and you're learning how to drink, I didn't have that experience, so I can't really say on it. But I think that is good that you're learning at a young age how to handle yourself before you learn to drive, right? I think that's a good idea. That doesn't imply that you should drink and drive, right? And you shouldn't be, you know, you shouldn't be 16 to be able to get a bottle of Lalavine, because one, that's trash. That's literally nail polish. Go for Viva Valga. But, you know, just because you can doesn't mean you should. And then you're too easy to develop these constant loops of, oh, it's Friday, let's get drunk. It's Saturday, let's get drunk. It's Sunday, I need to sober up, but still going to get drunk. And then Monday, you're ready to go.
It's so sad. Actually, like, Estonians don't understand that they do it.
Yeah.
Like, when you talk like
it's
that.
It's like we grew up like that. Our parents drink, our grandparents drink.
And
like
our friends is like, oh, what else there's to do? Like, at summer, okay, yes, there's a lot of other things to do. But when it's dark, it's depressing, everything like that, and it's like, oh, do you want to get like one drink and then you wake up at, I don't know, some friend's house and the next
home
day
at 6 a.m.
It's
sad, but like everybody does it.
I don't want to be that guy, but it's too culturally ingrained.
It is
that it's, and that's kind of the thing, is like you would think like, oh, like we're having a massive move away from alcohol in the States with a lot of increase in marijuana usage, but the problem, the same thing is people use in excess and not in moderation. Right, like if you want to get fucking stoned out of your mind, go do that. But, you know, you shouldn't be able to buy, right, like when, like Germany has a great system. When you're 16, you can drink and buy beer, right? But you can't buy hard alcohol until you're 18, right? The same rule applies, that I don't think that, you know, marijuana should be 21, anything past 20% THC is ridiculous. Because one joint should be able to fuck you up for at least to a good high for 4 hours before you need to toke back up. But this is the idea that you can have, you know, same thing as that, you're 18, you can go out, buy a bottle of vodka, drink by yourself, and get fucking hammered with no idea what the repercussions is, because, well, that's too much fucking alcohol. I just think that's the one thing, is that there's not enough of a social network to understand that. Because, like, Iceland had the same problem, but they introduced a lot of youth activities that allowed them to see a long-term decrease in alcoholism and a decrease in alcohol usage over the population over 15 years. We haven't got to that point yet where the Estonian government will do this. I think it's coming, you know, with the ban, like they're putting the sale of alcohol from 3 to 2 in the morning, which, by the way, is bullshit, because there's too many kids who will not understand the pain of getting drunk at finishing drinking at 3 and realizing McDonald's closed 2 hours ago. Like, it's, the gap is not going to be big enough anymore.
No, it's just going to be like that all the kids are going to get drunk before they go out because they can't drink out, like, if they're out.
That's
in
the house. I did it, like, now still do it though, because it's way too expensive to get drunk at clubs or like in the city.
That's the whenever you think about it, next time you go on a trip or you reflect on your last vacation, whatever you did there, was it as fun as you thought it was? Or is it more being with your friends and the journey to that point? Like, I think Dale Earnhardt Jr. said it the best. It's like, he loves going deer hunting. He has a deer farm in Ohio. And he'll do like an 18-hour road trip with his buddies. Once you shoot the buck and you got your tag, the trip's over. Now it's all the work to get home. But all the fun is all those moments to get up to line that shot up. And that's my thing, is that's why pre-gaming is so good. That's why, like, you know, getting blazed with your friends is so much fun, is it's getting to the point of being high. Once you're high, you're not doing anything. Once you're drunk, you're just, you're like, wow, new blue again.
It's like, let's find a spot to smoke.
Yeah. it's that, like, that taboo, like, oh, I shouldn't really be drinking in public. Like, there's a couple times I've drank in the parking lot in my car with my buddies. Like, we're not really allowed here. We might get kicked out of school, but it's like, let's do it. It's just a small little bottle of, like, a mixed drink or something. It's like, let's just do it. And that's the fun of it. But it's, no one's taught that. It's used as a medication too often, I think, to suppress things. And because of that, it's too easy to fall into a loop of stuff and the negativity. And so it's either you're in that negativity loop or you're just working your ass off. And I don't think we have a happy median. So,
I mean, with alcohol, you know, you're like addicted when you start drinking alone, I think.
Yeah.
Because that, you know, when you drink with friends, like, yeah, you get all kinds of stupid ideas and maybe it's fun, but like when you start drinking alone, that's a sign like you need to stop.
Yeah.
I mean, smoking alone, it's okay.
I would even say that though is also a sign, because I think the misconception with marijuana though is that as, like, I think it's great to smoke by yourself and you want to go do something. That's fine. You really, it elevates anything you're doing. But if you're doing it consistently more often, right? Because I remember I don't know how you are, but like if I have it in my house, even if it's like half a bowl or it's a full gram, like I bought 3 grams one time and I went on a bender for a week. Like I was just out of the 120 hours that are a week, I was hot, I was sober maybe 15, 20 of that week. So it's like I have to have it. That's my brain. So I don't do it anymore like that, or I buy very small quantities. But it's just, it's too easy to fall into that loop. That's my point. But again, get what you're saying. I think with the, you know, how do I say it? Smoking alone, there's like levels of it. Just alcohol is that one where it's, I like, mean, you're sad.
The point is like you need to do everything in moderation with alcohol, with smoking, with pretty much anything, you know.
Yeah.
And what I use when I go out with my friends, if I do anything like for fun, I make sure that all the things that I had to do, like my work, school, whatever, those things are done, and then I can relax.
You're supposed to do that.
Ding ding ding.
But like Estonians, it's so fun to see, as me as an Estonian myself, it's fun to see how when we drink, like before we drink, we like get together, like, cool, hi, nice to see you, we drink, and then we start talking, and then we like
open
I don't know, open up, and it's so fun, like we're so close people, it's that we kind of like do need a little bit of alcohol to like chill out.
I mean, it's like at your shows, you know, some people, if they were sober, they wouldn't even laugh, but like when they're drunk, like the front row girl, you know she was drunk,
she was smashed,
so you knew that like she would respond like easily, she wouldn't be like that offended, like she would take it as a joke.
No, she was really offended.
She was
Yeah, did you leave at halftime?
No, I wasn't there.
Oh, yeah. So what ended up happening is in Pibe's set. Now, Pibe got showed up. I have to leave in a second, but I'll say this quick. Pibe was working, so she came to the second half. She opened the second half, right? So she did her 10 minutes. Now, here's the trick, though. Pibe did not see me close that first half. So what you end up seeing is Pibe making jokes about her because the set was fucked anyways, to the point where she gets up and leave. Right then, Pibe finishes her set talking to the other chick, her best friend. Now Pibe comes off stage. She starts talking to Ari. That girl comes off stage. Off the audience. The blonde chick, her friend, so pissed she tries fighting Pibe in the bar.
No.
And then eventually the boyfriend pulls her away. So there was no fists were thrown, but it was just like me not speaking Estonian, like, ooh, this is funny. Just watching this shit go down. It's like, wow, this is really a cat fight. I can't wait to see this one.
Yeah.
So
when she would have like had come up to you, you would have been like, I'm an American, I don't know anything.
No. Oh no, I would have, if she, I think that's the beauty of me being American, is people are scared to talk to me, because one thing is that if you get into an argument with me, we're going to have that argument in English, and my command of the English language is so far superior to a majority of Estonians who have not constantly practiced it in an argumentative basis or in a debate sense, that you will lose on that factor alone. So they're nervous. They already know that. But if they did come up to me like that, I was like, I'm sorry, you continue to ask me questions. If you just go along with it, right, I'm gonna leave you alone. But once I realize you're irritated, so either if you ignore me, right, or you just keep getting more irritated, I'm gonna pick on you more because I'm finding funny. Let's just go, and everyone else is enjoying it, and I'm working my skills at the same time. But if you just like ha 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 and you went along with it, then I would have left you alone, went to my material, and I probably would have, that set probably would not have done as well as it would have the way she continued. I know that set was well, that crowd work was good, but if she just ignored me and just went with it, that set probably would have been so shit, because my mummy up its shit. It's not the best. It's really hacky, you know. I need to work on it, but it's like it's the same shit, you know. It's just like it's there, and it's like you're feeding into this. You're not helping yourself. Like there's sometimes I'll ask chicks, and like remember this one time in Tartu, this chick was drinking, and she like had a bottle, she like spilled a bottle of wine, and I made a comment about that. I'm like, how many drinks have you had? She's like, this is my eighth. And I'm like, yeah, put the bottle fucking down. And she starts drinking out of it. I'm like, you're not helping yourself. And then we just start making jokes about her. So, yeah.
Okay.
Okay.
We really need to wrap this up.
Yeah. Let's say bye to Caleb in English and then wrap it up in Estonian.
Yeah.
Okay. Right. So thank you for coming.
It was a pleasure to be on it.
Yes, so, thank you so much.
Yeah.
Yes.
Life is not that serious, and comedians help us understand that.
Yeah.
So everyone go see the shows.
Yeah, no, I'll be honest with you. If I can get like my whole goal of coming on here is if I can get one person to laugh at me or like one person to look me up, I'll be fucking set. It's like the coolest shit to me, just be able to speak and people to listen to me. So I really, really appreciate it for the opportunity to come on. So thank you guys.
Yeah, thank you. Yeah. Okay. So, nii.
Lõpetame eesti keeles,
et ühesõnaga stand-up comedy siis päris tihti toimuvad. Me käime küll päris tihti seal.
Me käime väga, väga tihti.
Ja et vaadake, Facebookis annab kohe teateid, millal need jälle tulevad. Ja.
Selline hea vaheldus argipäeva elust, nii et kindlasti vaadake Comedy Estonia Facebooki lehte.
Ja kelle aeg on ka.
Ja. Nii et olgu, meie olime tüdrukud, aitäh, et kuulesite, followge meid Instagramis, et tüdrukudofficial, kirjutage meile tüdrukudofficial@gmail.com, Facebookis oleme, YouTubeis oleme ja igal Spotifys pool. Oleme, nii et aitäh, kuulesite, tüdrukud.
Yep. Walking out, näeme varsti.
Bye, bitches.
Oh, normid tibud ju.
Me pole mingid tibud.
Me oleme fucking tüdrukud.